You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get up.
IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. With me this week is Ryan Geddes.
Hey, guys.
Greg Miller is here.
Goop!
And Levi Buchanan
is
here. One of our favorite people in the entire world is joining us. It is episode 201.
Wow.
A space odyssey.
Yes. Last week we celebrated episode 200 of GameScoop. Hard to believe.
Amazing.
So we start on another, another century of GameScoops here with 201, and it's getting off to a bittersweet start. Actually, we're very excited for what the future has in store for us, but at the same time, nothing lasts forever, ladies and gentlemen. GameScoop listeners, one and all. Levi Buchanan has something he would like to tell you.
After 8 awesome and fulfilling years, today is my last day at IGN.
What?
This is how you tell me?
And where are you going, Levi?
I am joining Chillingo, the publisher of games like Angry Birds and Cut the Rope. Mm-hmm.
Angry, what is it? I've never heard of this one.
It's a baby game.
Oh, really?
It's for babies.
Huh. It's for the 3DS?
Yes.
Yes, today is your last day at IGN, isn't it? You drove down late last night.
Yeah, I drove down last night, wanted to spend my last day here in the office with you gentlemen.
We do appreciate that. Very sad to see you go, Levi. We're madly in love with you.
Thank you.
And the listeners are madly in love with you, too. Lots of listeners wrote in some of their favorite memories.
Levi, I didn't know what they were doing, though. You did it all sly-like.
Yeah, I just asked. I said, hey, Levi's going to be on the show tomorrow. What are your favorite Levi moments? There's this listener named Matt Jones.
Oh, I've heard of him. I know him.
Heard of him. He remembers the time we held a contest for the listeners to name your dog.
That's right.
You rescued a dog with a broken leg.
Yes.
And then there was a contest to name it, and then you did not accept the winner.
Yeah, I think the wife overruled it, didn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
That tends to happen.
Yeah, the winner was Waffles, which I thought was the best name in the universe.
It's a great name.
When it's just me and him alone, I'll sometimes still, hey, what's up, Waffles?
You and I know.
Yeah, it was overruled, but the winner still got their prize, which was Arkham Asylum.
Wait, what name was chosen in place of the GameScoop winner's name?
Pancakes.
No, unfortunately.
Flapjacks?
Finnegan. Which was fine. I was like, that's a great name. That's great. But then one time I was walking by, walking through the living room, and she was watching Glee, and the main character's name is Finn, and I just about lost my shit. I'm like, we did not just name this dog after the lead character in Glee, did we?
Trevor Thompson says, he wants to count every episode of Retrocity as his favorite Levi moment.
I love those. Those were so much fun.
Trevor says he still listens to those podcasts.
I appreciate that.
He still
that.
Like goes back and like listens to them.
They're a fun line. They're in a time capsule.
Levi's voice
they're
is only like, so soothing.
They're only
right?
like 5 minutes long each.
Yeah, they're
right?
short. They're like really 20 short. Minutes.
I think, yeah, there were a couple that stretched out to about 20 minutes. But yeah, most of them I try to keep really short.
That's good. Now, I don't remember this. Justin Doss says he loves your Woody Allen impression. Well, I don't remember you doing this.
I think it was a few months ago. Just did it really briefly. And I don't remember the context.
I don't either.
It,
is he doing it now?
Justin would like to hear you do it again. I don't want to put you on the spot.
Oh, There's this old joke. These two women at these
That was good.
Yeah.
That was good.
I can see why Justin likes it.
Adrian Jimenez, I think you told this story on Knockin' Boots. You must have. When you saw your first muff on Playboy.
Oh, there's that story. Oh, yeah.
There's a couple of Knockin' Boots stories. So.
You said you blacked out for days and woke up as a man.
That's correct. It was unreal. Like I had to rebuy that issue. Like
Steven Strom says he liked the story about how you met your wife.
Yes.
This is a complicated, like, romantic comedy scenario, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was complicated, but maybe a little more trashy.
Okay.
It wasn't trashy. It was sweet.
It's kind of like a 90s movie.
Yeah.
Where, like, there's Rally Bites 2.
There's a rave or something.
It's
or
a house
big
party.
House party. Yeah.
She's married.
There were guns involved.
Yeah.
And MDMA.
Steven also liked your joke about all girls being tens in the dark.
That's true. You know. That's true.
The other thing that he really liked is something I don't know if you want me to bring up, but he likes that story.
Yeah.
Connor Davenport.
I know him.
I know him too.
Friend of ours. Came and hung out with us in the office.
He did?
He liked Greg's Levi rant in episode 74.
Yeah. As soon as I knew you didn't like Patapon, I'm like, this guy only has 5 more years here tops. Like, this is the beginning of the 5-year tailspin.
Just like the PSP.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
What were you ranting about? They was ranting because he didn't like Patapon?
He read The Ruins over playing Patapon.
Yes.
That was what he did. The Ruins.
Well, listeners that enjoy Greg's rant, stay tuned to later on in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Greg has...
I'll fire it up.
I'm excited. I didn't know about this.
Oh, yeah.
Greg's going to be taking a certain rapper from Kansas City to task.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Oh, don't let me forget about my secret question that I'm going to bring up.
You have that because someone else, a listener, wrote in about our bathroom etiquette.
Okay. I have another bathroom question to raise later in the podcast.
Oh, man, we're just teasing all over the place today.
Stick around. You don't want to miss it. Oh, we should also tease to something we have at the end of the podcast, too.
Yeah. We got lots of great stuff.
I'm just going to sit back and let you do
this
your
job. This is a jam-packed show.
Hey, Ryan, this is me time.
Sorry, let's
stomping on my me
time. We got a couple more memories.
The man in the cardigan.
Sean Johnson loved when you sold almost all of your video game collection to benefit Haiti.
Mm. Yeah.
Sean said he almost won. He bought the IGN 360 instead. And finally, Kevin Moyle says, upon hearing the phrase, big black guy needs love, Levi said, I'll be right there. This is in Knocking Booth episode 1, apparently. I didn't know you were in the first episode. That was good. Too bad. I do regret that we couldn't get you on another episode of Knocking Booths. Before you left.
He'd always be a guest star.
That's true. Are you ever going to come down here again, Levi?
Yes. Yeah, we'll be back in San Francisco.
All right. So whenever you are, you can always be a guest on GameScoop or Knockin' Boots.
I'm determined to break that tradition of, you know, where you like you leave a job and everyone's like, oh, yeah, we'll stay in touch. And then, like, you walk the door, whatever. But, like, I'm not unhappy. I genuinely love and respect, you know, all of you. So I will be extremely upset if any of this, you know, goes away.
So please keep trolling Levi on Twitter and Facebook and everything.
Go to the Chilingo forums and just rant and rave.
Dear Chilingo, slow news day.
Can you tell us anything about what you're going to be doing at Chilingo?
Yes. So I will be the position is senior manager of developer relations, and I will be
getting developers coffee.
So maybe maybe the listeners, maybe not everyone understands. Chilingo is a publisher.
Yes.
They publish indie games on the iPhone.
Yes.
Or on mobile platforms. Mm-hmm. So they do Angry Birds, Cut the Rope.
Angry Birds, Cut the Rope.
Those are the biggest hits or
those are the two
missing?
Those are the two big hits.
Okay.
Like the two major top liners. Yeah.
And so you're like a middleman between Chilingo and developers or how would you describe it?
I'm gonna find out a lot more.
Okay.
But I will be though definitely looking for games. And then there's gonna be part of the job will be working with developers on polish and UI. I'll help with marketing as needed. There's actually the list has like is like 12 deep of like all the different things that I'll be doing. I'm very excited.
And you're going to give IGN all of the exclusives.
Well, I'm not in the media department, so
no, I know.
Yay, no.
I heard yes. I don't know what you heard.
That's all I heard.
And yeah. I'll take with me the memory to be my sunshine. Join it after the rain.
Join it. Join it.
To say goodbye to yesterday.
All right, enough about Levi. I got dead.
Old. Yeah. Now, Damon, we got to start the pool of who will quit after episode 300.
I know, right?
Get us, I'm looking at you.
I don't like Patapon either.
Yeah, that's just what I was
going to say. The 5-year countdown clock is on.
Although I hear you can pause Patapon 3. Mm-hmm. So maybe that will swing me back around.
There you
around
go. That's what you needed. That's what you're back into now.
Will Patapon 3 be on a system that you don't have to update every
No, it's
other
on the
week?
PSP.
Oh.
Yeah.
Do you want to share your experience?
Your iPhones. Your iPhones need to be updated too, don't they?
Right. They do from time to time, but they still work.
Yeah.
Even if you don't.
Yeah.
Do you want to share your experience, Ryan, with when you decided to play Gran Turismo 5 the other night?
Oh yeah, it was awesome. Yeah. I had a free hour or so, and I was like,
just
you know
hop
what?
On, just play.
I'm gonna
Grand
hop on
GT5 for an hour.
Yeah, I was like, I haven't played in a while, and I really had the urge to like collect some cars and race some cars and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I fire up my PS3. And
it spits out a bunch of dust.
there's a firmware update that I need to download. So I download the firmware update after, I don't know, a quarter of an hour goes by. Mm-hmm. Then I get into the game menu. 4 updates are queued up for Gran Turismo 5. So when my hour was up, I still wasn't done.
You couldn't turn off the system now
because
it's
updating everything. Yeah. I couldn't do anything else in the system. So yeah,
here's the thing, Geddes. I'm not sure if you're aware. But there's some. I mean, I've only been following a bit of it. There's some kind
incoming,
of set. Some force called GeoHot or something. It's just attacking. It's attached itself to PS3s or something.
So they're trying viruses. To figure it. That's the viruses. Yeah, yeah. They're protecting me. Is what they're doing.
You
they're
think
spending
I'd be,
time
you
now.
Think I'd be mad? But you actually summed it up, I thought, in a great way on your tweet. Because your tweet was 140 characters. That's always the crux of my argument when you do this.
Yeah.
It's just that your tweet was, and I won't say it word for word, obviously, but it was something along the lines of that the firmware scheme is actually brilliant. Firmware and game update scheme is actually brilliant because it punishes you for not playing your PS3 anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes me go, all right. And actually, somebody responded to me on Twitter and was like, you know, I upgraded to PlayStation Plus specifically
background
so I wouldn't have to deal with this. And he said, I feel like a whore for doing it or whatever, but I'm much happier now. So,
yeah.
I mean, come on, roll that out to the entire user
Agreed.
Base. That's just crappy. Anyway, enough about that.
No, why? Let's not talk about video games anymore.
No, sorry. I don't want to rant about the same thing every time.
It's not a rant, though. I don't think it's a rant. Like, it's interesting, not argument, I guess, but like, where is the line in the sand? How I like the idea that people can update their games, but it is a total bitch. And so are installs, and so are firmwares. So it is one of those things. When I come home, and I know, like, I wanted to play, I think Dragon Age the other day or Crysis, and I came home and I was gonna play it hours later. But the first thing I did was turn on my system, put the game in. There's an install, let it go, and then I cooked dinner and I watched TV, and then I was ready to play.
There's two things for me. One, I think that overall, Sony's user experience is garbage. Mm. Like, it's just not. It's not friendly. It doesn't.
I totally agree.
It doesn't make me happy to turn the system on and play around with it. And like it would be a lot easier even if they did something simple, like say put the system update button like really big right there bottom of the screen. I can just click it and I'm done instead of having to go over into the system and click system menu.
There's
find
a lot
it.
Of steps. There's a lot
it's,
of steps.
It's annoying. Also, the whole point of consoles in the very beginning was to get us away from this PC-like system of constantly updating. Do I have the right stuff? And it's like it's the same kind of like thing. It's like, do I have the right drivers installed?
Yeah, yeah,
no,
yeah.
I don't have to go find them. They provide them for
just
me.
Put in your cartridge. You turn it on.
You're ready to go.
Click it on.
Your game
sit
tape.
Back with your beer or your coffee or whatever and just play.
It's
but no, I don't, I'm not able to play
right away.
A
bigger issue for me overall, because I think the more you use it, the more you understand it. And I think that's always the argument me and Damon will have when we want to, for some reason, shoot the shit about about Xbox versus PS3 is that whatever you use makes more sense. When I try to use the 360, I'm like, I don't understand where this is or where that is, but that's just because I never use it. The problem I have with the PSN overall is that the download speeds are so slow compared to Xbox Live.
Yeah, it's
I don't
crazy,
understand
right?
how Xbox Live downloads so fast and PS3 doesn't.
Because isn't it because it's the service you pay for on Xbox Live, so they put more... They have better, yeah. They give you more bandwidth.
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I don't. I think would silver members get a slower download speed on Xbox Live than gold members on title updates?
I've tried to argue. I told Scott Lowe I wanted to do a feature where we would compare him download stacking on each system and see how long it took. And he started going into all this minutia of why that wouldn't work and why that wouldn't be a fair comparison.
Did he go into the Matrix?
And then whenever I talk to people at Sony about it, they say the same thing too. They try to blame my internet speeds.
Oh,
but when I see my Xbox,
of course, because here at IGN.
Go so quickly.
Yeah.
My Xbox.
Is it the speed of it or is it just the size of the updates? Is it just that?
The point here is.
But I'm talking about downloading games.
Do we have to have. Why do we have to have all these updates all the time to make these games work right?
It seems like it should just be. Console updates should be like quarterly or something.
Yeah. You know, I mean,
they should be scheduled and just.
Gran Turismo 5, why are there 4 updates stacked? When I played it like a couple months ago. Like, that's not that long of a time.
That's because Gran Turismo 5 wasn't the best product when it came out.
Exactly, but that's a problem, right?
Yes, totally.
Were any of the 4 updates, though, content-related?
Or I don't know.
You don't know. You don't know what you download.
They don't tell you download. Here's what, I can't say, no, I don't want that one. If I want to play that game, I have to install those downloads. I have to install those updates.
That's crazy.
Here's something that's really nice. You know, on iPhone apps and games are constantly being updated. But in every update, you can see what's being added.
Yeah, that's nice.
Before you update it. That's what they should be doing on console. So you see exactly what it is that you're downloading.
Yeah, you could play, the original, you could play the game that you downloaded for the next 3 years. You never have to update.
That's true. And if I wanted to be offline, I could. You know, I could just unplug my internet or turn my PSN off if I wanted to play the game. But I don't know. That's a workaround. We're used to seeing our friends online and being able to see our trophies and all that stuff. So anyway, that happened.
So we solved that, right?
Yeah, we solved that. Fixed. Okay. Next.
Speaking of Patapon 3, what's going on with your review, Greg?
I want to review it.
You want to?
I want to review it real bad.
Okay,
but
then
I can't yet.
Approved.
The servers just went on live. The servers just went live, and since nobody has the game yet, there's no one to play on yet. And the Patapon 3, one of their big thrusts this time is online multiplayer, which I know sounds juvenile to everyone else, but this is a big deal for the PSP. Not many games ever support servers and stuff like that, so it's really cool and it's really interesting, but the game's huge and I don't have people to play with, so I gave away a bunch of codes to some listeners that are joining me this weekend for an IGN Patapon Tribe. We're getting our clan together. You can make clans in the game and we're going to play through it, but I'm doing a review in progress where I'm updating every day with impressions and stuff, because I'm not going to have it ready for launch day on Tuesday, but I want people to have an idea of if it sounds like something they're into. Thank you.
Yeah.
Now maybe you can do it, huh?
Okay.
Are you going to stay, Levi? You like Patapon now?
Yeah. No, I just think that's what a neat thing to do to work readers into a review. I think that's cool.
Yeah, it's easy crowdsourcing, and then when I want to do second opinions, I can just email them back and say, give me your opinion on the game.
And then when they're...
So heads up, everybody.
Everyone disagrees with the review, you can be like, hey, reviewed it.
It's all your experience that ruined it for me.
So Patapon 3 is out on Tuesday.
Correct.
What got to be one of the last big PSP games, isn't it? Like, what else is coming after that?
Yeah, we already got Dissidia. We already got Third Birthday. Valkyria Chronicles 3 is out in Japan, but
I don't think
they've announced US.
They haven't announced
date.
That yet.
Yeah, yeah. So
they're really cranking those out, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, they didn't. Caleb sat down and tried to teach himself Japanese throughout that game to play the demo 3, and he says they've changed a lot, but it looks a lot like the other one. So, which was great. Valkyria 2 was great.
That's great.
I like
But I don't know what they'll do with that. Yeah, it's interesting to.
You think we'll see another console version, Valkyria?
No.
No, I really doubt it. I think you'll see an NGP version or whatever.
Not going to see trophies for it either.
Yeah. They're never going to add those silly people.
Another thing about the PS3 that's not every game just has trophies. Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
Well, they added them late, yeah.
Totally bizarre.
I don't understand why more people don't go back and re-add them.
I know.
Well, I guess then you have used game sales.
Geddes.
Yes.
There's a Gears of War 3 beta is about to start.
Shit, I gotta go.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, it starts April 18th.
If you bought the Bulletstorm Epic Edition,
that's when it
which was the
for
you. Xbox 360 version of Bulletstorm, right?
Yes, but if you, that's not the only way to get into the beta. So April 18th is when the Gears of War 3 beta starts for people who bought the Epic Edition and still had their disc and their code and everything. And then April 25th, the following week, is when anybody who pre-orders Gears of War can get into the beta. So pre-order it at GameStop or whatever the participating retailer is in your country, wherever you are, and then you'll get a code and you can get into the beta the following week. So it's a four-week-long beta. And if you get we get a lot of questions, if it's bullets, if I buy Bulletstorm and I get in that way, am I cut off the last week of the beta? No, it's if you're in, you're in through the whole thing. So,
Is there an end date for the beta? Like, after it starts officially, it's April 25th.
It's May something. It's mid May. It's like a month essentially. Okay. Yeah,
I got you.
It's in the FAQ. We have a FAQ up. Gears of War 3 beta guide or something is the name of the article on IGN, so go there and it has everything you need to know.
How concerned is Cliffy B that, you know, Monday there's going to be all these people playing and then Tuesday SOCOM comes out, so just
he's really sweating that a lot. Yeah. He's been really quiet on Twitter lately because he just must be thinking about it.
Did my PS3 copy of Bulletstorm come with this beta code too? I think not. That would have been awesome though. Wouldn't that have been radical?
If they messed up.
No, they did it on purpose. Fuck it, here you go. You probably have a 362.
Is this the first multiplayer beta they've done for Gears?
Yes.
Now, these have worked though exceptionally well in the past for Halo. Games.
Yeah, well, it depends on the developer, right? So, I mean, it's worked really well for Bungie because they are actually trying to get information from the beta and work it into, you know, they're doing a lot of testing. I mean, we just don't know how... Epic has no track record with using multiplayer beta data to make the multiplayer better for release.
But doing it is certainly better than not.
Yeah, in fact, like a lot of people have been calling for them to do multiplayer beta ever since Gears 2 came out because there were so many problems with the online multiplayer in Gears 2. They listened. I mean, they really did. They listened to people's complaints about that. They listened to people. People wanted dedicated servers. They wanted the host advantage to go away. They wanted all these things to change with the way the multiplayer is set up. They did all those things. So, I mean, if the beta goes well and they take all the information they gain from that and work it into the final product, I think that it'll be great. I mean, the multiplayer is great right now. I've played it a couple times now. I'm sorry, not the beta, but I've played at Epic with their developers. I played at an event here in San Francisco.
I was with you. We played together at San Francisco.
Oh, at the event. Yeah. You were there. What did you think of it?
You kept screaming, "Look out for the Warhammer" or something. I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, Greg was just spinning in circles up against a wall, like just not doing anything.
Look at these textures.
Greg is known for not being a big shooter fan, but this is a third-person shooter. Does that make any difference?
I like third-person games. I've always thought Gears is pretty. Me and Levi actually ran through Gears 2 together, wasn't it?
Yeah, we finished up Gears 2.
We played for like 6 hours straight that one night, and like 2 in the morning we're like, fuck this. We're not doing this. We were like one level away from the end, too.
So tired.
Yeah, we're done.
Did you ever finish it, though?
I did finish it offline.
You finished it the next day without me.
Yeah.
Jerk.
Awesome Brumac ride.
Oh, God. See, and this is the other question.
This is how you're ending this?
We haven't seen any of the single-player stuff yet at all. I mean, they released the trailer, but they've not shown any of the single-player gameplay or anything. So, I mean, I'm assuming we're going to see a lot of that at E3.
Yeah.
And we also haven't seen the revamped Horde mode. We know they're going to include Beast mode now, which is the from the Locust perspective Horde mode.
Finally.
Right. You've always wanted
what is their story?
To play as a ticker.
They're leaving their larva behind.
Actually, playing as a ticker is awesome in Beast mode. But so yeah, there's lots that we don't know about the game. Comes out in September, thus we've got a lot of time to.
So I wonder when Gears 1 and Gears 2 came out, I thought both of those games at the time were the best looking console games I'd ever seen. But now Crysis 2 is out, looking really really good. So I wonder if Gears 3 is again going to like set the bar for.
I don't know.
Visuals
on consoles. Multiplayer, of course, it's a little different because it's not quite. They can't pay quite as much attention to all the little details. But I don't know. I've seen Crysis in action, and I have a hard time seeing Gears 3 do better than that.
But my curiosity, so with Crysis, though, do you think, though, it has a better sense of place, though? Because that, to me, is what always blew my mind about Gears. Was just, it wasn't just that it was beautiful, but it's a beautifully realized world.
If we're talking I don't get that sheer from Crysis. Graphics, then Crysis wins. But I agree with you. I think that the sense of place is better. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, it was just a bunch of gray blocks. But the interesting thing about Gears 3 is they're bringing a lot more color into the world now. And it's not just pops of color here and there. There's color kind of saturated into the environments. You have like greens and blues and reds and yellows in the actual environments themselves that you really didn't have to speak of in Gears 1 and Gears 2. So that's what might make people have, Damon, that like moment again where it's like, oh, my God, Gears is beautiful, right? Because there's all these pops of color that you didn't have before.
I think color is probably the most underrated thing in video games. You know, people don't talk a lot about the color in games, but probably because it's such an intangible, but I think color affects you almost more than anything when you're looking at a game when it's used.
And music, I think. Yeah. But between like really good uses of color and then like really well done sound and music, I think those two things together can really make an experience.
I mean, I love the Gears world. And the thing is that I like it so much that even though I did not like Gears 2, I still want to go back to that world, to that universe. So.
And what's interesting about Gears 3 is there's a new writer, Karen Travis, who's a novelist. I wasn't a fan of the last game's narrative. I thought it was kind of ham-handed. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what she...
Have a delicious ham hand.
Don't eat it, David. What happens with it? Because there is a lot to it. And we had this conversation with Cliff during GDC about the world of Gears and telling stories in games and how there's so much fiction outside of the actual game world. There's the comic books and the novels and everything that not a lot of that makes its way into the game itself. So I'm really hoping to see this kind of rich world that they've built actually in the game and part of the experience. So it's not just like, oh, cool, look at those pretty buildings. Let's shoot some monsters.
Well, it's great that there's all the extra items, but it's not fair if you have plot or narrative holes and you're just like, we took care of that in the novel.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not reading that novel.
Yeah. I mean, what if you were watching a movie and it was like, I don't know what the hell's going on. And the guy next to you is like, well, didn't you read the comic that like came out right before the movie?
You just described Superman Returns. You just described Superman Returns. Yeah. There was a 4-issue lead up to Superman Returns in comics that told more story than that movie did.
I worry that Dead Space does that sort of stuff too.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Tell a story. I got bored with Dead Space too because I was like, I don't know what's happening and I don't really care.
Really?
It's you got bored with that?
Yes. It's the same story as the
it
first
is,
game.
It is the same story. I totally agree with that.
There's a woman directing me around.
Why are you so
I don't
angry?
Know where I'm going. What do I do? There's aliens everywhere. Bored.
That was
really
the only, yeah. That was the only slight disappointment for me. I finished Dead Space 2. I enjoyed it a lot, but I was disappointed by how similar it was. And you just have the same scenario again.
Yes, exactly the same.
The only with a less interesting climax at the end for me.
That was what undid. I mean, I had a great time with Dead Space 2, but I remember that last battle. I was like, I don't necessarily know what I would have done.
Yeah.
You know, big monster? But
I love the
get
big
to,
monster
like,
fight at the end of the first one.
Okay. That's abstract and unsatisfying.
It was abstract and unsatisfying.
Did he just describe Superman Returns?
Yeah, I was fine with it. No, he didn't. I don't like me and Damon, when we were talking about it, I don't remember the boss battle at the end of Dead Space 1.
Really?
I remember being really frustrated walking that goddamn marker back to slowly taking a step back. That's what I remember of Dead Space, and then obviously the kick with the cinema at the end. But I don't remember the fight, so that I didn't mind at all. And I was happy to have something abstract and different, I felt. You know what I mean? Because the whole part of Dead Space is leading up to that fight, no spoilers. That was my favorite part of the game. Everything involving that thing, that fight at the end, was my favorite part of Dead Space 2. Hmm. So that's why I was fine with it. And then, but then he the ending is just like, oh, okay.
Yep.
All right, good game scoops. Thank you, Damon. Thank you, guys.
Moving on. I like this story. I like EA calling out Activision about Call of Duty. The EA says that Battlefield 3 is being designed specifically to take down Call of Duty. They both are going to be coming out in November, right around the same time. This is John Ricciello speaking recently. Says, this November, we're launching Battlefield 3. It's going up against the next Call of Duty, which is presently the number one game in the game industry. A game that last year did $400 million in revenue on one day. Battlefield 3 is designed to take that game down. Chances of success. Ryan Geddes.
I don't care.
Oh, okay.
When I saw this, somebody said it on Twitter, and I think it might have been one of our editors. I don't remember who it was. Might have been an editor at another site, but they said, what's the point of saying this? Why do we have to talk like this? Just make a great game. Just make an awesome shooter, and don't worry about taking down others. Like, what if, like...
He's not making the game, though.
He's not making the game, but it is his job to worry about taking down the competition.
He's firing up investors, yeah.
Yeah.
What if it was like, I don't know, this is like, what if it was like Random House saying, we've got a new book series for young adults. It's going to take down Harry Potter.
I'm sure that their publicists do say things like that.
You think they say things like that? I think that's lame.
Maybe not. I thought it was cool. But
I kind of like it too.
I don't like people working in a vacuum and being like,
it's so weird to think of EA as the underdog. But in this situation, they are, you know, and I'm rooting for them.
Yeah,
like, yeah, take like, down that big bully, Call of Duty.
People are going to play Call of Duty just as much as they're going to after Battlefield 3 comes out as they ever would have before. I don't really think of why does it have to be one taking down the other? Like, why can't
because
they
that's
just
interesting. That grabs a casual person.
That's conflict. That's what they're looking. It's drama.
Yeah, 400 million.
400 million on the first day.
First day. That's not people who. That's more than just people who check IGN and check whatever.
400 million what on the first day?
Dollars. In revenue, on the release day for Black Ops.
Okay, yeah, that's huge.
1 in 8 homes have Black Ops in it.
Battlefield 3 is never gonna do that.
Yes, but you're missing the point.
So now you finally answered the question that I just asked you.
But I think the better question is, who cares, right? Like who
the
cares?
People who only care about Call of Duty. I can make the best superhero game in the world, and if I don't compare it to the most popular superhero game, the people who are Googling the popular superhero game never hear about my game. 1 in 8 homes have Black Ops. 1 in 8 homes don't read IGN, 1UP, whatever, every day.
But aren't we just playing into this like dumb pissing match between EA and Activision right now?
What's our job in general?
I don't know.
Isn't
I think
every
it's about the games.
Playing into somebody's marketing
it's about
plan?
The games. Like, it's not about what these CEOs say to each other, like about who's going to beat who.
I like drama, and I like viewing conflict from a distance.
That's my perspective.
I think it's more interesting than just having them do their normal thing of like Battlefield 3 is going to be great, and that's the end. I'd rather see them.
Yo, bro.
I know you like Battlefields, so I made 1, 2, and a third,
and a free one.
You get Battlefield 3, you also get Medal of Honor.
What were we talking about?
I don't know. Right. I thought Levi was going to make a point. So
no, I didn't. I made a point. You sort of made it. I mean, what do you want him to just like? Are you going to be as good as Black Ops? Just have him go,
I don't know.
We're going to try
our best.
I don't know.
I hope we make a good game.
What if he said, hey, you know, people are going to go ahead and continue to play
Call
of Duty.
Like,
that's
let
fine.
The game speak for itself and just throw the mic down.
Yeah.
That would be badass.
Which would actually
be kinda, man. I totally want that. That's exactly what I want.
Get us. Shoot for the moon. You just might land on a star.
Minecraft has a release date. The game that is already out, already playable, has already made $33 million in revenue.
Nice.
Has a release date.
Well, I've been waiting for this beta to end, so yeah, I'm ready.
It's still in alpha.
I've been waiting for this alpha to end.
Minecraft is an incredible success story. I was absolutely amazed when I found out it has already made $33 million. What's the story? Was this like developed by one guy?
Pretty much, yeah. Notch.
What's his story? Has he made games before? Did he come from where does he come from? Another planet?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, Mr. Slime would be the one to talk about that. He's our sort of in-house Minecraft guy, but
the way I understand it, basically this dude made this game called Minecraft and put it out there, a beta out there, and he's already made $33 million off this. That makes me feel really
good. Yeah, way to go, Neutron Synergy.
I know, right?
Hey, our time will come. Okay.
Really, I just think that's cool. That's such a great
change.
Story.
It's amazing.
It's great. Yeah.
It's really great. So
and
now,
there's a great community around that game.
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing. It's
do you want him to come out? I designed Minecraft to take down Call of Duty.
Anyway, Minecraft is now officially coming out on November 11th, the same day as Skyrim, or Skyrim, as our news story currently reads.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, you can tame wolves in Minecraft.
I think you can in Skyrim, too.
If you're interested in the Minecraft, plenty of good how-tos on IGN.com, as well as a MyIGN community that has made their own, world in it that you can go exist in.
Also, Charles Zanyet and I are going to be doing a special Minecraft video today that you'll be able to watch. More on that later.
How many pickaxes are in it?
More than you can count.
Oh, my God.
Charles is going to be playing Minecraft, and I'm going to be asking him questions about it. So it's like, if you don't know anything about what Minecraft is, watch this video.
Is it a live stream?
It's going to start out as a live stream, and then we're going to archive the video, too, so that everybody can watch it. And we'll have more information about that up online. If you're listening to this now, you've probably missed the live stream already. But, yeah, it's cool because the thing is, Charles sits over near me, and my ritual thing is he starts playing Minecraft, and I go over to him and start asking him dumb questions about it. And we were like, well, we should probably put this up as a video so people who don't know what Minecraft is, who maybe aren't playing the game, can get an idea of how it works and what makes it cool.
Gotcha.
Now let's talk about a release window for a game that people actually care about.
Oh. Demon.
Disgaea 4.
There you go. How many millions of dollars is this designed to take down Final Fantasy?
Disgaea 4 is coming to the U.S. in September. It will be released in Europe later this fall. Disgaea is my favorite turn-based strategy series. Greg Miller, when Disgaea is released,
yeah.
I'm going to be at home playing my PlayStation 3.
Oh, my gosh.
Just nonstop.
Can I give you a PlayStation 3?
Can I give you a bit of advice?
Yeah.
Turn the system on the night before.
Yes.
Download all your firmware updates. And when you do put the game in, despite the fact that you will have gotten the game 2 days before release,
yes.
You'll put it in. It will still have an update that it needs to go through before you're able to play it.
Yes, I'm sure.
Spot on.
No, I will not. I'm not going to mess this up.
Okay.
Can I ask you a question? Love this guy. Yes.
Do you have a rough count at this point of how many printies will be in the game?
We don't have a final count, but I'm hoping that the release of Disgaea 4 brings more printy underwear for our fan, for our friend Julie to model for us.
Yeah,
always good.
All right, really excited for Disgaea 4. Just a couple quick news updates before we get to the goodness. Operation Flashpoint, delayed a month in the U.S. Delayed 2 months, actually.
There's a trailer for it up on IGN right now.
It's supposed to be out this month. It's now pushed back to June 7th, but still coming out this month in the U.K., which means that we can still put up our review this month because we have a U.K. team.
Nice.
Dungeon Siege, delayed a month from May to June 21st.
All my big hitters getting delayed.
A bunch of games have been pushed into June.
Sounds gross.
Hillary Goldstein says June is where games are sent to die.
Well, they're coming out during E3.
Well, that's right after E3, but okay. Duke Nukem comes out during E3.
Yeah.
Infamous 2.
June also?
Yep. It comes out during E3, the 7th.
Mm. Wow, really?
Yep.
Crazy.
It's a big month for games.
Is that a good move or bad move?
Infamous wants to go up against Duke Nukem.
Good move or bad move to what? To have it come out during
E3? Yeah.
I don't think the general public will care.
Yeah.
I think Duke Nukem is going to sell really well.
Duke Nukem is going to sell
well.
It will
sell well.
It will not review well.
No.
Probably not.
I think some sites will give it okay reviews, but...
That's a game that it might not need a great review.
No, it doesn't. It totally doesn't. It has enough. There's enough buzz.
Everybody
kind of
is going to expect that it's going to be maybe not living up to modern expectations, but you know,
it's like you know, whenever the new Transformers movie comes out, nobody's really going to expect it to be good. Also, out today is Dino D Day.
Yes,
Dino D Day.
Nice.
And speaking of things that you're listening to, if you're listening to this, you might have missed already. If you're in the UK, Kapow Comic Con.
Yeah,
go to that.
Kapow Comic Con is happening this weekend. It's a Comic Con being put on by IGN in London.
Yeah.
So that'll be really fun. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, now we are joined by Jim Guthrie, the musician who provided the music for Sword and Sorcery, this hot new iPad game that everybody's talking about. Levi, you reviewed this particular game, and you gave it a pretty fine score.
I gave it a 9.5.
That's almost as high a score as the highest score you can give a game at IGN.
There's just one more over it. And I toyed with it.
You did.
Wow, that's great.
So, Jim, thank you for taking the time to talk with us on the show today.
No problem.
And congratulations on the soundtrack. It's really quite a piece of work. I've played some of the game, not as much as both Ryan and Levi has, but already I'm totally taken aback by how good the music is.
Oh, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
So Levi, for anyone who hasn't played it yet, you've reviewed the game for us. Mm-hmm. Give us a quick synopsis of what Sword and Sorcery is all about.
Well, Sword and Sorcery, on a game level, it's a point-and-click adventure, but there's a lot of levels on top of that. There's the meta level, where there's a narrator that has the experience. And then what really struck me about it is it's this perfect marriage to me of sight, sound, and gameplay. It's not so much a video game as an experience that has game and toy elements to it. It's just one of those games I fell into. It really is striking to me. It's one of my favorite games of the last year.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Jim, I was wondering how you got involved with this project.
It actually started probably back in like 2003 or 2004. I had first met Craig.
And Craig's the developer of the game?
Yeah, he's the main sort of artist mind, sort of mastermind behind the game.
Super Brothers.
And he had sent me a postcard with some art on it to this little, like, I had a label, or I sort of helped ran a label back in the day, just this little indie label, Tree Gut Records. And he had sent some art to the label because he really liked all the bands and stuff on the label, and I loved his art. So I sent him a bunch of my music And some of it was actually the music that's in the game now. It's like some of the sort of early, just sort of odds and ends that I had, like instrumental stuff. Like, so, and he really liked that stuff too. So we've been in touch ever since. And then when the game sort of idea came along, you know, he asked me if I would do the music for it, you know, and so we, went from there.
So how involved, so it's kind of started out with you saying, hey, I've got these odds and ends. I think they'd be really good for the vibe of what I've seen so far from the art. So, how involved were you then after the game actually took off and they started making and building the game and integrating the music? Did you pop in and say, hey, I think this music would be better here, or I've got another track that I'm working on, or did they just kind of take what you had already and integrate it into the game?
You know, I think it was more of like a conversation the whole time. And I think that's what sort of makes it sort of like a really special game, and that, you know, first it started with a few tracks of mine that Craig really got inspired by and did a bunch of drawings and paintings to and stuff and got the idea for the game going. And then once that art was done and he had a bunch of music that he liked, you know, we were sort of trying to ram the music into this game experience, and we didn't even really know what the game experience would be, although we just knew that we wanted the sort of music to be, you know, really sort of like front and center, and the art really shine as well, obviously. And then after we got to that point, you know, I would make more music and we would just talk about what it is we were trying to do. But like I said, this game was a real sort of mystery to us for a really long time. That was a good thing. I sort of feel like the art was leading us instead of, you know, we didn't know what kind of game we wanted to make right from the beginning, but we just knew we had a mood and a vibe in mind, and that was all we needed, I guess, to start.
Well, I think it's still kind of a mystery to us too, the people who are playing it. I mean, I think that's what's cool about the game in a lot of ways. It's I'm I guess 2/3 of the way through right now, and I'm still not really sure what I'm playing, right? But I love the experience anyway. It's very atmospheric, and I feel like it's leading me into this world that I've never really experienced before.
Yeah, and you know, I think that, like, we only had so much time, and we knew that there were sort of elements of the gameplay that we wanted to have in there for sure. You know, and there's definitely things, like, we don't think it's a perfect game, and I think there's a lot of things that now, you know, like, now that it's done and it's out, there's all these things that we want to do, and we think about sort of all the gameplay aspects that we can, you know, but it was sort of more about, like, an experience, and less, I mean, there is, you know, like a game in there, yeah, but it's more about sort of a place that we wanted the sort of player to be in. So we just spent a lot of time on the art and the music and the sound design and just the sort of vibe, you know. So,
have you played a lot of games before you were involved with this project? And if so, were there things that are usually done in video game music that you wanted to stay away from, or things that you wanted to actually do?
You know, I don't know. I think that's a good question, in the sense that, like, because sometimes you'll like the music in a game, not because the music is great, but because the gameplay is great or the game is awesome, and it just sort of, you're just like, yeah, this music rules, even though it might not be something that you would listen to normally, or, you know, but I think normally, like, it's kind of like the music serves the sort of game, like our game, in the sense that, like, it's really less of a game and more so like an experience, you know. It's more like you're experiencing music and art sort of in motion, or it's like an album that you can walk through sort of thing, is another way that we used to put it. So I think when you think of it that way, it's hard to sort of compare it to other games that I've played in the past and sort of be like, this is what I wanted to do or this is what I didn't want to do, because I've never really played a game, I guess. Or you know, there are some really well-done games that are really sort of artfully done, but, you know, most of the games I played growing up or ones I've played in the past, you know, are like, you know, just kind of shoot 'em, kind of puzzly, you know, like adventure games that have, like, really big soundtracks or really kind of, like, blippy soundtracks. And I think I tried to do both in the sort of score that I did for the game. But, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of good soundtracks out there, I guess.
When you first played the game. I don't know how the process worked. I'm assuming there was lots of iterations of the game. It wasn't quite finished, and the music was in, the music wasn't in. But like for me, like the Lone Star track is the piece of music that I really think of when I think about the game, okay. And it's kind of become iconic to me. I don't know, even though I've only been playing the game for.
When is that first play? When you first hear that in the game?
I don't remember the exact moment.
Do you hear it in the first episode?
Jim, maybe you can tell. Yeah, I think.
Yes.
After you exit the...
It's a song with the upright bass comes
okay,
in.
Yeah.
There's that cool little high-pitched line that comes in. We'll play a little bit of it here. But,
when you're first going up the mountain.
Okay, I know. Okay. When you said upright bass, I knew exactly which one you mean.
I mean, when you saw that moment in the game and heard the music playing over it for the first time, did you feel like, oh, this is it, like this is something special, or were you too close to it to really kind of know at that point?
Yeah, no, you know, I think there's the cool thing about the project in the way that we made it, like there were so many kind of surprises, because like I said, it was sort of a mystery to us the whole time. We were just kind of following a sound or a vibe. So yeah, like when we put music and certain art, when we sort of like married those two things and sort of saw like a build in the early stages. Yeah, there was like some really huge moments for us. We were just like, this is so cool. Like, this is exactly why we're doing this. This is, you know, this sort of hits a point that we sort of knew that we could. Yeah, like I've learned that it's really hard to make a game, you know, and it's a lot harder to make a game than it is a record. There's just so much involved that, so, I mean, yeah, like, for me to see these things sort of come to life over a really long process of trying to, like, you know, just, like, you get an idea and then you have to sort of, like, problem solve it until it's dead, basically, and then it all of a sudden comes to life and nothing breaks or there's no bugs, you know? And so, yeah, there was a few moments like that for sure where we were just like, this is the coolest thing. Like, we were just so happy with ourselves, so...
One of the things that... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Damon.
I was just going to ask, Jim, are you a fan of the movie The Thing, the John Carpenter version?
Huge.
Because some of the soundtrack kind of reminded me of the score to that.
Yeah, no, I would be lying if I said I didn't love that soundtrack. And
that soundtrack, yeah. When they have that bass line that's like, dun, 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 dun. That totally made me think of The Thing.
It's like that kind of
in a good, very horror, good way. Horror very, vibe. Very good way, yeah.
It's a horror vibe that never really feels oppressive, though, I don't think.
It's a synthy horror soundtrack, which I love. It's great.
Yeah, like John Carpenter is such a genius, and I couldn't not sort of tip my hat to him.
That's great.
He's unbelievable.
One of the things that I like about the music in the game is that, like, it doesn't ever feel like it's going where I expect it to go. I was thinking about that, like Maelstrom is a good example of that, where uh-huh. you listen to it and it's sort of bringing you along and it's a satisfying sound, but it's kind of not, the notes aren't hitting where I would expect them to hit. I wonder if that's something you're consciously doing because the game is sort of that way. You don't kind of know what's going to happen next and it's this very sort of strange journey. Is that something you were specifically thinking about, or is this just kind of more of an organic process than that?
Yeah, I think it's more organic. There's some things that we definitely tried to sort of score. There's some aspects of the game that are kind of scored, you know, where we wanted the music to hit certain points. And other times it's kind of more of a wallpapery kind of vibe. But, like, you know, it's still really up front and we still want it to be noticed. But early on we actually tried a bunch of things where we were going to take, you know, one of the songs and chop it up into a million pieces and have it in a bunch of loops and then sort of have it work out as like an adaptive score to sort of, if the player sort of crossed a certain node, you know, it would sort of trigger the next loop in the song. And if they stayed in that area for a long time, it would just like sort of loop that one for 8 bars. And then if they didn't move along, you know, go to another loop. It was like sort of this like really complicated flow chart that we made. And that sort of proved really tough early on, and it sort of just screwed the game up all the time. Things would break or the loops wouldn't trigger. And it was really cool to try and do. It was really complicated and maybe a little too complicated for our first game or our first attempt. But it was sort of an experiment that we really, you know, we sort of early on had this idea and really wanted to have this adaptive score, I guess. I'm not sure how, I mean, I'm sure there's, you know, I'm sure like somebody who's been making games for years would be like, oh, it's easy, you just do this, this, and this. But, yeah, we were sort of trying it in a way that, yeah, it just proved pretty tough. So we didn't go that gung-ho on that aspect of it and sort of, yeah, had a little bit of scoring But yeah, most of it's just sort of happenstance kind of stuff. But I tried to score the music for the scene, you know, for the vibe or whatever it is we were trying to get across in that point in the game.
Well, cool. Well, so now the soundtrack is available now, right? People can buy it on iTunes?
Yeah, and Bandcamp on LP, vinyl, record. You can get it as well.
Very cool. And the game is out, too, of course. Sorcery for iPad.
It's out on the iPad right now, and the iPhone and iPod version will be out, I think, in like 2 or 3 weeks by the end of April for sure.
Great.
Well, great. Well, hey, Jim, thanks for your time. I know you're busy. You got a lot of stuff going on, but really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. Love the soundtrack and the game.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
thanks.
Take care, Jim.
Congratulations. Okay.
Okay, so we've just interviewed Jim Guthrie, musician for Sword and Sorcery.
A fine fellow.
And he was kind enough to forward along a couple codes to download the soundtrack to Sword and Sorcery. So Ryan Geddes, do you want to explain how this works?
Okay, so Jim was nice enough to provide us with a couple of codes, and these are redeemable through Bandcamp. Damon, can you tell us a little bit about what Bandcamp is?
Bandcamp is a digital download service for indie musicians to sell their music. It's really flexible and allows musicians to set the prices for their albums and individual songs, to give away music for free if they want. You can always sell your music through iTunes and Amazon, but you have no control over the prices there, basically. That's the difference.
So don't go to iTunes for this because you will fail. So what you need to do is go to jimguthrie.bandcamp.com/yum to redeem these.
Y-U-M.
Yep. So it's J-I-M-G-U-T-H-R-I-E, jimguthrie.bandcamp.com/Y-U-M, yum. And here are the two codes to redeem. First one is 49SS-G7TH.
Code number one.
Code number two. 424S-3JUV. There you go. Thanks, Jim.
Pleased to enjoy. The soundtrack to Sword and Sorcery is awesome.
Hands down, my favorite game soundtrack the last 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, it's great.
I completely
years.
Agree. It's really special, and it's the game is coming out soon on iPhone and iPod Touch too, so you'll be able to actually play it. But grab the soundtrack. It's good.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hi, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com, just like Emmett Rosenbaum did.
It's a good name.
Emmett says, hey guys, I heard your debate recently about Spider-Man squaring off with Batman.
Here we go.
You all argue that Batman is a genius without smart Spider-Man. You seem to forget that Peter Parker is also a genius, being incredibly smart on his own. Now, this is news to me. We talked about this the other day, Greg.
Yeah.
I don't think of Spider-Man as a genius. Anybody else?
No.
It's because the modern interpretation of Spider-Man has lost sight of the fact that, yes, he was a total nerd, into chemistry, into stuff like that. The old school Spider-Man, you remember, of course, he didn't have organic web shooters. He was so scientifically gifted that he made web fluid. He knew how to make, you know, brew his own web fluid and go out and web around that way. Yeah. But then what happened is the Tobey Maguire crybaby Spider-Man came around, and that kid was just a bump on a log. He wasn't good in anything. He was a terrible person. And yeah, so no. But comic book Spider-Man, before Brand New Day, he made a deal with the devil, of course. It blinked out his wife. He forgot all about her, so now he's not married anymore. He was teaching chemistry for a while before the Brand New Day started, before the blink. And so he's still smart, but see, he's book smart. Batman street smart. There you go. That's the end.
Okay.
But isn't Batman – I always think of Batman as really – poorly adjusted as a person.
Yeah, of
course. He has no social
Spider-Man
skills.
Spider-Man maybe has a higher emotional intelligence.
It's because of it. Yes, you're 100% correct. Because Peter Parker is Peter Parker. The disguise is Spider-Man. Batman is Batman, and the disguise is Bruce Wayne. When Joe Chill
Bruce Wayne
killed Thomas and Martha Wayne, Bruce Wayne died.
Spoilers.
Emmett says, P.S. Batman and Spider-Man are from different universes. So our argument was that Batman can beat any superhero because he has a strategy.
Yeah.
So Emmett says, Batman and Spider-Man are from different universes. So if they fought, Batman wouldn't have a backup plan because he wouldn't have known Spider-Man existed.
Emmett Rosenbaum, you are a moron. Of course, everyone remembers the 1994 series, I believe, Marvel vs. DC, Superman squared off against the Hulk, Captain America fought Batman.
Batman beat Captain America. Mm-hmm. There you go, Steve Rogers.
Well, Captain America is dumb, so...
Of course, he's retarded.
Yeah.
And not... Whatever. And, yeah, so there you go. Batman knows all about Spider-Man. Don't worry about it, all right? And he watches the dude for 2 seconds. He'll know.
Don't you think it would be a wash? Like, they would tie?
No, that's not how... No. I just told you, he beat Captain America. And Spider-Man beat Superboy in that comic. I was very upset, but justifiable. Whatever.
Rodrigo says, hola from Monterrey, Mexico.
Hola!
Lo siento. Mexico. Just a quick question for Damon and a general one for whoever's with Greg and him this week.
It's Levi.
Number one.
Hey.
Geddes.
I've always wondered if DJs use pre-recorded riffs and loops on their songs or if they come up with their own. After listening to Damon's Tokyo Game Show tune last week, I just wanted to ask if you composed every bleep and bloop on it or some of them pre-existing ones. So don't confuse like DJing with producing. Like when I'm out DJing at clubs, I'm playing like other people's songs, you know, mixed together, presented in an entertaining way. That's more about like celebrating music that already exists and packaging it together for people who want to dance and have a good time. Whereas producing is more about composing and creating new tunes. And sometimes you use samples in that. But in the case of Tokyo Game Show, I wrote all the synth lines and programmed the drum machines and did all that on my own.
When you've been out DJing, mm-hmm. have you ever dropped synthetronic sounds on a club?
I played synthetronic sounds before.
How'd it go over?
It was people always think
everyone
it's,
just stopped staring at him.
They always think at first it's that other it's the song I based it on, the when I hear music, it
oh, yeah.
makes me dance. That song.
And then,
they realize it's not that, then they're like, oh.
Oh man.
Boo! Get off the stage, you heck.
Question number two from Rodrigo.
Oh, that wasn't the general one.
Here we go. And this will lead into Geddes' question. Bringing back the beaten to death issue on bathroom etiquette.
Ooh, yeah.
Where do you stand on gaming and or reading while getting your business done in the bathroom? I usually spend an extra 5 minutes in there because I have a magazine rack to entertain myself, and I can't leave an article unfinished. Sometimes I take my iPad, iPhone, or PSP in there, or use the extra time to catch up on some book reading, too. Rodrigo, I'm totally there with you. I actually cannot sit there and not do anything. I have to have something to read or do.
This brings up not my original question, but another general problem is if you have something too interesting, you have the legs falling asleep
yep.
problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, there comes a point at which you have to make a decision. Like, am I going to sit here and just let my legs fall completely asleep, or am I going to, like, get up and actually get some shit done?
Sometimes I don't know how our lives are so difficult.
I know, right?
Well, I think we agree it's okay to bring multimedia devices into the bathroom with you
question.
As long as you're at home.
Is that a male thing? Do women do this too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
Okay.
So I have another question that I've been wanting to bring up. Speaking of the bathroom stuff, this is along the same lines as, is it okay to bring your beer into the bathroom with you if you're at a bar or something? Mm-hmm. Which we all decided was a totally fine thing to do.
No, we did not decide that.
The other question is...
For
okay.
the record, I've stopped doing it since
thank
this
you.
Happened.
You're, thank you.
But it's usually because I'm not drinking with Damon. I'm like, hold this.
And you know he's going to just glare at you the whole night if you don't do it. So you're at work or you're at, you know, a restaurant or bar or whatever.
Okay.
You got to go to the bathroom.
Of course.
You go into the bathroom. You're at the urinal. You're sitting there doing your business and you decide, you know what?
I'm not sitting at the urinal.
I'm just going to pull out my phone and sort of check Twitter or check my email with one hand while I'm peeing with the other hand. Is this okay behavior or not?
I wouldn't think so.
I wouldn't do
I hope it's okay because I've done it.
Oh.
I'm not saying I've never done it. I'm sure there's been a time where I've done it. But
you're
I
sure
think,
there has been or you know there has been?
I do not know. Okay. But it sounds like something I would have done before, but I can tell you most time I would not do it.
The catch is don't ever, while mid-process, switch hands.
No. No.
The weenus
you don't
hand cannot
the,
touch the phone
the
hand.
Streams. I mean, okay, so your hand is, your phone hand is clean, you think. You put the hand in the pocket to bring out the clean phone. You look at the phone. You put it back in. This hand has not touched anything bad. So why is it bad to check your phone in the bathroom? Is it just douchey?
What can you accomplish on the phone in the time that you're peeing?
I don't know. You could check. You could flip through Twitter really quickly and see some stuff. I asked because I saw somebody doing this in the office the other day, and I was like, I've never seen anybody do that before. So I don't know if it's just me.
I'll tell you.
Or if I'm like, if I'm thinking it's weird, or
I think it's weird.
I don't think it's weird, but it's just I wouldn't.
It's not.
Do it.
It's like it's wrong.
You find a lot of weird stuff in the bathroom. The other
this is
the other
true.
Day, everybody knows the Superman pose with his hands on his hips like this. Walked in somebody peeing like this in the urinal. Walked in like, and when we're off air, I'll tell you who it was. But
oh, yeah.
I was like, okay, yeah, cool. That's weird.
Well, maybe that person doesn't get a lot of stuff done that they can be proud of in a day's work. So that's their moment to kind of really feel like they're
accomplishing
something.
It looked very relaxing. Like I've thought about trying it somewhere else when I'm alone.
What about
maybe that's it too? I walked in
clasped.
The
behind the head. That'd be a good one, too.
Peeing from a hammock.
I'd be curious what the listeners think about the phone thing. So.
Another thing that bugs me, I have a lot of bathroom pet peeves. Another thing that bugs me is the really loud peer, the guy who goes up to the urinal and he'll be like,
oh, yeah. Maybe just like take a couple more bathroom breaks during the day much of a release to go into the bathroom. Levi, you're being oddly quiet on this issue.
I have many bathroom issues. You know the one that gets me? It's at urinals. Is you go and you step in and you look down and there's just hair all over it. And you're just like, are you pulling it out that fast and hard that you're like, jeez.
I don't think I've noticed
that's
that.
Really gross.
Yeah,
the pee on the floor always grosses me out too.
Well, yeah. It's not that hard.
It steadily gets farther and farther, and then you have to comply too. You're just getting farther back too. You're like, oh, I don't step in this.
This is Andrew Goldfarb.
Oh! Well, big time IGN user. He's the one who was on The Office and 30 Rock. Or I'm sorry, 30 Rock and in a whole bunch of movies and Sherlock Holmes.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, sorry.
This is an actor, famous actor?
No, he's a famous IGN user. He's a background. He was a background actor for like 5 years.
Oh, cool. An extra.
Yeah, exactly.
Says, I was recently playing through Mass Effect 2's Arrival DLC. Came across my biggest gaming pet peeve.
Uh-oh.
A battle that you have to lose in order to continue the story. I hate this gameplay mechanic since I always fall for it and end up struggling for way too long, only to find out that I should have just let myself die. Just curious to see what you guys think of games that do this, and if you think of any particularly frustrating examples. If the game is smart, it won't let you, like...
get too far into it.
It'll just kill you. The boss will be so overpowered, it'll destroy you with one hit or something.
My annoyance with that is not that I wasted my time. It's that in a game where resources are scarce, which is a lot of games, like you have a certain amount of ammo or health packs or energy or whatever, you waste all that stuff thinking you can try to win the situation. And then you realize, oh, crap, I had no chance.
I think the unwinnable boss battle at the beginning of the game as kind of like the active tutorial, I'm fine with. But if it was something midway through, that would be... that'd be a frustrating.
When I run into a boss like that, or a boss I think could be that, I usually just let myself lose. Because I'm usually like, well, this is probably something I can't beat. Oh, no, I'm supposed to beat that. You know what I mean? Like, instead of using all my potions or whatever.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought of Halo Reach, because that's a time at the very, very... well, spoilers. Spoiler alert if you haven't played the end of Halo Reach for the next 10 seconds. You know, when your guy dies at the end and you have to fight your way out. You know, but there's no way to win.
Because the story of Reach is doomed anyway.
Yeah.
Just noticed, I like your socks.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. This is Kells McLaren. Kells, I kind of like that name. I was wondering if you guys have access to all the pre-order bonuses in your review builds.
No,
but we should. We totally should.
No, because you want to be reviewing from the base experience.
Yeah, but it'd be nice to be able to tell people like what's worth pre-ordering.
That's a feature afterwards.
Like we got L.A. Noire, where you only get one of the episodes by pre-ordering from Walmart.
One of the most annoying aspects of modern gaming.
I agree.
Retail-specific pre-order bonuses. So dumb.
Eventually they come out for everything, but yeah.
That's really weird for L.A. Noire, a game like L.A. Noire, to partner with Walmart to do an exclusive mission in the game, right?
And is that really going to get people to buy at Walmart instead of somewhere else? People who are going to buy games at Walmart are probably already going to buy their games at Walmart.
And their aluminum siding.
Andrew Elmore wants to know, what are some of the Scoop Crew's favorite movies, and what on earth does Mr. Hatfield see in Jackie Brown that he doesn't see in, say, Reservoir Dogs? Andrew, I never said I didn't like Reservoir Dogs.
That's a weird
I know.
Snowball to throw at you.
I know, it's really weird. Tarantino's my favorite director. I love all of his movies. He's only made one movie whose title is a girl's name, though, so I wasn't going to name my cat Reservoir Dogs.
That'd be awesome if you did. Hey, Reservoir Dogs, come here.
My cat is a sassy black lady, so I named her Jackie Brown. It made perfect sense.
I almost watched that the other day. It's on my queue. I'm going to get to it.
It's very, very good.
I know.
But speaking of favorite movies, last night, it's not one of my favorite movies, but I watched a classic movie. I watched Short Circuit last night.
Oh, it's Jackie
Brown. It holds up really well. It's very entertaining.
More input.
My favorite thing is every time he's like... upset about something, he goes, I think I'm going to start doing that. Every time you annoy me, I'm going to be like,
I like his expressive eyebrow slates that he has.
Wally was a total riff-off of Johnny Five.
Yeah. We need, are they bringing that back? Has that been greenlit, a new Short Circuit?
I don't know.
Get Gutenberg back up.
Short Circuit is on Netflix instant streaming. Listeners, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. I'm hoping that next Short Circuit 2 will be available
in
streaming.
It needs to be, because that's a dynamite movie. You know, I need a hero. And his battery's bleeding out. Oscar! I need a hero.
What's amazing about Short Circuit, of course, Steve Gutenberg is in it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Ali Sheedy.
Steve Gutenberg, famous, one of his most famous movies, Police Academy.
Yeah.
And the mean sergeant from Police Academy is also in Short Circuit.
Yeah.
I had totally forgotten that. He's playing the same exact character.
He's trying to track down Johnny Five,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was so amazing. That's great.
I'm sure they'll reboot it with, like, Will Smith's kid.
Oh, God.
Oh, have you seen the Karate Kid reboot?
No.
It's so boring.
It is
It doesn't
awful.
Exist to me.
It's awful. And it's not about karate.
Yeah, Kung Fu, right?
It's in China. Kung Fu. It's in China, yeah.
It's stupid.
Yeah, I watched
saw it on an airplane.
I saw it on a plane, too. Yeah. I didn't think it was terrible. I just thought it was straight boring.
Yeah, really bad.
You know, Kung Fu Kid, it's a Master System game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was talking up some Master System last night. House, Ghostbusters. Yeah.
But other favorite movies, we mentioned John Carpenter's The Thing earlier in the show. That's easily one of my favorite movies.
I'm a big Kubrick fan, so I love 2001.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Eyes Wide Shut. This is okay.
I've actually never seen Eyes Wide Shut.
It's not that great. But yeah, Doctor Strangelove and all that stuff. I'm a big Stanley Kubrick fan. Recent favorite movies, I do like The Social Network, which
Social Network is now one of my favorite movies. Yeah,
really like that one. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking on a lot of stuff.
Ghostbusters, Mallrats.
Mallrats, huh?
Yeah. It's one of those touchstone movies. Like, it encompasses it so much. You figure back in the day, the internet wasn't huge. So if you were a comic nerd, video game person like myself, you felt very, very much alone in that kind of world. Yeah. So then to have Brody be there, you're like, I'm Brody! I can have sex with Shannon Doherty!
Speaking of, like, feeling alone, like, I felt bad. Like, so last night when we started watching Short Circuit, I posted on Facebook that that's what I was doing. I said, I'm watching Short Circuit with my girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I got comments on that status update. And a couple of my friends on Facebook were like, sounds nice, .. in bracket lonely.
Oh.
and more than one person did that. I was like, man, I feel bad.
You don't have to feel bad, listeners.
Yeah.
You're our friends, you know that. Reach out to us anytime. My IGN, we're always there for you. Here's a hug.
Yeah, uh-huh. We're hugging you right now.
With our legs.
Favorite movie,
now
though,
my
right?
hand is going south.
absolute favorite is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, that.
But some good. Of my other favorites
what about
are...
Christian Skull?
No. Close Encounters, Third Kind, Annie Hall, and Sweet Smell of Success.
I don't know that one.
Sweet Smell of Success.
It's Tony Curtis, Burt Lancaster. It's a black and white.
Old.
It is old. Some of the best movie dialogue, though, I've ever heard.
Huh. You see?
I'm also a big fan of Blade Runner, of course.
Never seen
the
it.
Director's
Which
cut?
Did the you like the director's cut? No, is that the one that ends with, well, spoilers, but...
Yeah, no spoilers.
Okay.
That's the one, though.
Okay. This listener would like Greg to butcher his name.
You got it, listener. Hello, my name is Georg Schunsachsen.
I think he's German. He says, I was just wondering, what's your favorite handheld of all time? Mine is personally the Game Boy Advance. I would say the Game Boy Advance SP.
That's a solid pick.
The one that was modeled after the Famicom, the old NES. That system was so awesome. Slick. It was great. I loved the flip it up, playing Mario versus Donkey Kong in that thing.
DS Lite.
Yeah, and the DS Lite is also the best one. It's not the Game Gear. Is anyone going to say the Game Gear?
I was going to say Game Gear. another one just based on the memories of it all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Honestly, I've never had a handheld I think that's perfect. You know what I mean? Like, I love the SP.
I mean, aside from the PSP Go.
No, PSP Go is not perfect, surprisingly. You know what I mean? Like, I've never found one that I thought was it fit all my needs. And the Game Gear was just so great because it was so crazy. Because it was, you had the color screen, it was huge, it ate batteries. You could get a TV tuner for the fucking thing. I had a laptop, or not a laptop case, but like a camera bag that you had the Game Gear in there and all these cards. Who wants to play Batman Returns? Who wants to play Alien 3? I got everything. Like, that was just a goofy system and I loved it.
Did you have any games that weren't based on movies?
I don't know how many there were, but I'm sure I did, yeah. See, I have a lot of, like, I remember having a ton of Genesis games, a lot of Master System games, lots of set, but like.
Did you have the Master System adapter for your Game Gear?
It sounds like you were kind of a spoiled brat.
I was, totally.
He's an
totally,
only child.
Totally an only child. Yeah. I'll never forget that the day I learned not everyone lived like that, because I had a
You're pure on mission in Africa.
My mom had her, you know, one of her best friends from high school come over, and she brought her little son, and I'm like, you want to play games? He's like, sure. And we went up there, he's like, oh, you got a Genesis? I'm like, yeah, I got a whole bunch of games, and I had like a little cabinet, like the size of like a mini fridge. It wasn't a mini fridge, but like a cabinet like that. And I opened the door. He's like, he flipped out. He's like, you have every Genesis game ever. I was like, I knew. Then we played Jurassic Park.
Oh,
You only had movie games.
No, okay. Well, again, you know, I had many other games. I had the Double Dragons on the Master Systems, the Ghost Houses.
Speaking of Jurassic Park, new Jurassic Park game coming out April 19th.
That snuck up. I thought that had a longer lead time.
Me too.
I didn't think that was coming up so soon.
Surprising.
Greg Miller's reviewing that one.
Yep.
We haven't heard Levi's favorite handheld.
Oh, no, easily the Game Boy Advance SP.
Probably followed by, oddly enough,
the iPhone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That's it. Yeah. I didn't even think about that one. But Game Gear, not a good name.
No.
Game Gear?
No.
But was Game Boy a good name?
Well, I was wondering that too, and I think so, but maybe not. I mean,
like
obviously
that,
it
at
is.
That time period, the word gear was kind of cool, though. People were using it a lot for like marketing. Is that just me, or does it seem like
gear? I wasn't looking into the marketing materials when I was.
Well, now that IGN Gear is becoming IGN Tech, the gear is officially not cool anymore.
No, lame.
This is Gustav.
Gustav.
First off, thanks.
Should have been Game
Gustav. First off,
thanks for the awesome podcast and the work you do. You guys make my days and my soul-killing job so much easier. His job kills his soul?
Poor guy.
Here's my question. I'm from Sweden.
Merce at GameSpot.
So English isn't my first language.
You stole the joke from my head.
I'm from Sweden. English isn't my first language. However, I went to college for 2 years in Lindsberg, Kansas. Kansas girls equal yum-yum.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I like to think
dumb as bricks.
I like to think that I don't exactly suck at English. I'm interested in buying Scribblenauts 2 for DS, but since it is so heavily focused on language and combining different words, do you think it's a suitable game for someone whose first language isn't English?
Well, might be a good learning tool.
Yeah. So two comments. First of all, it's I loved Super Scribblenauts. I think I gave it a 9.0 on IGN. However, it is, you know, largely aimed at like a younger gamer, so. You can solve the puzzles with you know, a high schooler's vocabulary, I think.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like if he can write this email and he lived in Kansas for 2 years, I bet he has enough vocabulary to get around this.
But also, in Sweden, do they not translate games there into Swedish? Like, when you buy games in Sweden, are they in English? I don't know. How does this work?
I don't know. I know that, like, localization is expensive, so they're not going to localize into every language. Yeah. I guess only huge games probably get localized into languages like that, but I'd be interested to hear from people.
Usually it's what? French, German, Spanish.
Japanese.
Yeah.
Australian.
Yeah.
Oh!
Just a couple more emails here. It says, this is Adam Willis. It says, I'm from...
What you talking about, Willis?
Plymouth. I'm from Plymouth in the UK. Been listening for a year now. This is my first time writing in. I'm going to say you guys put on a bloody fantastic show.
There's no need for that kind of language.
Also, Plymouth, I'm pretty sure, is in the United States, not England.
It's a rock. We landed on it.
Hello. It's an old Native American term.
Speaking of, I don't know if you saw, I mentioned this on Twitter after this happened. I was flying home from Boston for PAX East. They played The King's Speech on the plane. Wonderful movie. But, of course, they bleep out swear words on
Did
the planes.
Did they bleep out bloody?
They bleeped out every instance of bloody.
Wow, I swear.
Which is bizarre, because that is not a swear word in the U.S., but I'm on a U.S. flight.
What do you do in England if, like, you cut yourself and things are bloody? Do you just not say it? Like, what?
I can't say.
How is a word that could also be used in normal circumstances?
Well, I mean, it's the same thing like pussy willow. Or when you're talking about a cat,
you
pussy.
Said.
They're allowed to say that.
Please don't say
that
kind of thing on a podcast, Greg.
I guess obviously that's true. Didn't listen to yesterday's Beyond.
Okay, anyway. Adam says, like many of your listeners and readers, I eat, sleep, and breathe video games. Actually, I do not believe video games are edible. Unfortunately, not many of my buds are as passionate about this most prestigious of hobbies. I like the idea of a British guy saying buds. That's pretty good. I've set up my IGN profile. My IGN profile. Would like to know what's the best way to interact with fellow listeners and readers. Just today, I finished my first blog post. Hope people will have the time to give it a read and post some thoughts. My IGN name is RevoZero. Greg, you're very active on the My IGNs.
I am. It's a great community. Mm-hmm. Keep blogging. Comment on other people's stuff.
Yes, that's the key.
Yeah, you got.
Don't just write your own stuff and expect other people to comment.
Exactly. Because the most, you know, the ways it happens is you go comment on somebody's wall or on their blog, and then they click back to look at your stuff. Then they follow you. It shows you're being followed, stuff like that. Be part of that community. If you're really active, he says he doesn't have many buds. There's a great community of kids on there who are chatting it up, doing the tiny chats, getting on there. You hook up with Sarah Strickland, right?
Yeah.
Mushrooms, mm-hmm. mush_rooms there on the Twitter.
Knockin' Boots' official girlfriend.
Correct. You can find Javi on there. There's plenty of people
Walter.
To hook up with. Walter Lopez, Snack Pack. Mm-hmm. I'm on there. Just find me. Greggy-IGN. People.IGN.com/ Greggy-IG.
Adam says, P.S., who would win in a fight between Damon and Greg?
Oh, me.
Yeah, Greg. No, Greg's like twice my size.
He would go into a berserker rage.
He would gorilla pound me into a pulp.
Yeah. The thing I got going is that I don't have anything to protect. The face, no, don't worry about it. Like, I'm going to fight dirty. If we get a fight, too, and you want to go fisticuffs, I'm tackling, yeah. And I think I got a better chance on the ground, gouging at the eyes.
You could probably
going
just
for balls.
Wrap him in your arms and just kind of slowly squeeze like a boa constrictor yeah. until his head pops
just
off.
Just love
and
him
then
to
you
death.
Would, you would, and then you would disconnect your jaw and you'd swallow me whole.
I always want you inside me. forever.
Finally here, Graham Turner has sent along something to show his appreciation for
pictures.
the appreciation for the podcast, as many dreary work days have been brightened by your show. He's created this artwork. Now, he did one for Greg Miller, too, recently. So he's done this artwork. It's kind of me. And I'm hanging out with these hot girls, and it says Holy Balls at the top. It says Fly You Fools, 8-Bit Radio. So it's kind of some of the in-jokes from the show. But some of this copy that he's written over here is kind of interesting. I think maybe...
Are you going to embed this in the article for people to see?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that, too.
Does he make up a bio for you?
Yeah, so this is a bio for me written by... Would you read this?
You want me to read this?
Okay. Yeah, I didn't want to read it myself.
Besides the fact that Damon has the second greatest job on planet Earth, bested only by a professional puppy petter, he has that mysterious ethnicity that makes the ladies crumble? Seriously, what the fuck is he? Polish? Doubtful. Russian? Maybe. South American? Holy shit, is Damon Argentinian? Fucking A, how do you compete with that?
I'm just a white guy.
You don't. All us dirds... That's an asterisk there. Dird, noun, a combination of douche and nerd, or dick and nerd, or dork and nerd, and blah, 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 blah. Really? All you can do is bask in the glory that is Damon. He's a DJ, salubrously sampling something, something. He goes to foreign SoCal cities and picks up hot hoes. I'm not gonna stroke his ego anymore, Greg. I can't do this.
Well, that's why I didn't want to read it myself. Yeah. Anyway. I was appreciative of Graham, so I wanted to.
Yeah, Graham, he put together quite a little package there. Yeah.
That's really good art. I like the art.
Yeah, it's nice.
And he did one for you, too, right?
He did, yes. I don't have it with me.
Oh, you didn't get one, Ryan?
Oh, maybe that's why I'm bitter.
Graham, please do one for Ryan Geddes next.
You have made for make it made for lava, though, Ryan.
My ethnicity is not doubtful.
Lava. It's lava.
It's not what?
He says your ethnicity is doubtful. He doesn't know what your ethnicity is.
It's not. Is it? I'm just a white guy, right?
Yeah, I don't know why that's a mystery.
I'm a white guy, right? Before we go, Greg is fired up about something.
All right.
He's pissed off. He needs to tell the world what he thinks.
This is going to be a little bit more low-key rant.
Yeah?
Because I have respect for the person who is wrong.
A slow burn.
But I am upset.
Well, as these things go, we're going to give you 60 seconds to tell the world what you think. Tell a specific individual what you think. Are you ready to do this?
I'm ready.
And... go.
Mr. Tech 9, my name is Greg Miller. I went to school at Mizzou, and I'm a big fan. I was there when one of your posse members got arrested for tapping on a window with a fake gun. That's another story entirely. Big fan. I enjoy your stance on asses hopping and trying to orgasm onto a woman's tattoo. So I can connect with your music, and I thought we were on the same page about everything. You know, we both come from in Missouri there. You're Casey Moe, I'm Como. It's all good. We get together. We just go, hey, bro, what's up? And we do the head... Tried to make caribou loo, sir. Decided I want to have the beverage you talk about. 151 rum, pineapple juice, Malibu. Gonna make it for Levi's final day here. Very excited. Woke up early, went to the Safeway, got the pineapple juice. Thought $7 a bottle was a bit high, but I did it. Got Malibu rum. Sure, $20, no big deal. 151 rum is $30, sir. Why do you act like you're poor in your songs? You talk about being poor and having a mohawk and crazy. But you've wronged me, Tech 9. You're not one of us anymore. You live in your ivory tower.
And scene. A spirited rant from our own Greg Miller. Oh, wow, I had no idea that 151 rum was such a.
I don't. Is there only one shelf. Kind? Also, literally on the top shelf. Yeah. I never understood that reference until I found the one bottle of 151 rum for $30.
So you feel like Tech 9 is betraying his roots, the streets that he came from.
His song is about him and his friend invented it before this is like, you know, they invented it years before he was even rapping on the album I'm listening to.
Yeah.
Which he hadn't blown up yet.
Yeah.
You know, he says on the album, many people, it's hard to go somewhere and not, have somebody not know Tech 9.
I know.
Obviously. But what are these people? What
can I put forward a theory?
What kind of jobs did they have beforehand where they're going
he
out?
He and his friends might have stolen some 151 rum.
Is there only one kind?
Maybe they came by it illegally.
I went to the bottom shelf and looked for other ones, and then I'm like 151
is that the, just the proof?
Yes.
Of the, okay.
And I'm only finding like 40 proof down there. I'm like, oh, this is not going well. And I thought, well, I'm like, well, maybe I can just get some Captain Morgan's and I'll bring that. And that was all spiced. They didn't just have. I'm just looking for a label that said rum, just rum and nothing.
Well, I mean, can't a Caribou just kind of be, you know, rum and pineapple juice? I mean, does it have to be the one? Do you have to have the 151
well,
in there?
According to the recipe I found online, that was the one. The 151 is what sneaks up
you
on you.
Gotta the, have that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, Mr. Tech Nine, I'm a big fan, like I said. I would prefer another version of the Caribou Loose song, though, where you give out quantities. You just say,
one part, two parts, or one.
Pineapple juice.
It's true.
Malibu.
These are important
Caribou,
details.
Get them all numb.
You need to know.
I wanted to get numb today, and instead, I just bought 24 donuts because I was like, well, $12 I can swing.
Tech Nine is coming to San Francisco in June, late June.
All right.
So Greg and I will go.
We're not like there's no show. Comic-Con
later June, so
okay.
I think we can.
Okay, let's go.
So let's try to hook up with Tech Nine. I want to have a Caribou with him, and we need to share a Floradora with him.
You see, you're missing the easy thing to do.
What?
You just said it. We will go hook this up. Tech Nine will be here. Mark your calendars, everyone, for a Knock and Boots where
yes.
we will drink Caribou Loos and Tech Nine or in Floradora.
All right, the campaign to get Tech Nine on Knocking Boots starts now.
And begin.
That's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Greg. Levi Buchanan, I cannot tell you how much I'm going to miss you.
Thank you.
Love you.
Yeah. I love you guys, too.
Yeah. The listeners are going to miss you, too.
But we're happy for you.
Yeah,
thank you.
We're really happy for
I'm
you.
Not that happy.
Yeah, me either.
I hope you live up to your word and do not become a stranger.
Absolutely not.
Port Ghost House.
Because we're not allowed to talk to strangers.
I know. But you guys mean way, way too much to me.
And... Thank you all. This is IGN GamesCube, and we're out. Come get some. Beware, I live. IGN
GamesCube. Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.